Cardinals tackle Paris Johnson is week to week with an MCL injury in his knee. The Philadelphia Phillies and slugger Kyle Schwarber have agreed to a five-year deal worth $150 million, while the Dodgers sent former Mets closer Edwin Diaz to a three-year deal worth $69 million.
Fox Sports Update on KPRL, brought to you by Deeds Bar and Grill at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Great food, great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, Wine Down Wednesday, and specials Thursday through Saturday. Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with your agribusiness update. Well, Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins says trade deals under consideration may help reduce farmers' long-term dependence on federal support, even as a short-term aid package is being readied. President Trump's administration argues that expanding foreign market access through new trade agreements will create unprecedented export opportunities, offering farmers alternative income streams. Still, given current headwinds, the proposed bridge payment remains vital to help growers get through the 2025-26 cycle without severe financial hardship. The U.S. Grains and Bioproducts Council's 2025-26 corn harvest quality report contained good news. The 15th annual survey showed the corn crop is projected to be the largest on record at 425.5 million metric tons, or 16,752 bushels. The report showed 87% of the samples met all grade factor requirements for U.S. number one grade, while 97.8% met the requirements for number two grade. And the 27 member states of the European Union approved the European Commission's trade agreement with the U.S. However, Mexico Business News says the European Parliament will challenge the elements it considers to be unfair after President Trump tripled tariffs on EU products while Brussels eliminated duties on U.S. imports. In November, EU countries agreed to lower tariffs on U.S. imports under a deal struck last summer between the Commission and the White House.
For over 40 years, the Ag Information Network has been providing news and information for the most important industry in the world, agriculture. The Ag Information Network gives you worldwide updates from local producers to regional organizations, from major crops like wheat and corn to animal agriculture to specialty crops like apples, almonds, and cherries. We report on stories that mean the most to you. Online at aginfo.net, the Ag Information Network, trusted and transparent journalism lasting for the next generation. For the last 40 years, the Ag Information Network has been the source of news for farmers and ranchers. Yet we have never seen such an assault on farming and our food supply as we do today. From fuel to fertilizer, farmers are facing unprecedented economic challenges. This is why agriculture news that farmers receive comes from the Ag Information Network, reaching coast to coast. Deep roots in farming and decades of reporting, the Ag Information Network, trusted and transparent journalism for generations.
Get the equipment and trucks you need at Ritchie Brothers Los Angeles Auction, December 18th and 19th. This absolute unreserved auction is open to the public and registration is free. For more details, visit rbauction.com.
Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Stuart Varney, and this is the Fox Business Report.
A choppy trading session with stocks mixed as the two-day Fed meeting kicks off. Investors think that the central bank is highly likely to slash interest rates a quarter percentage point, according to CME data. However, investors have been increasingly expecting a hawkish cut. That is, that they think that the Fed will signal caution about slashing rates further next year. Investors are also digesting the delayed release of the October job openings and labor turnover survey, which came in at over 7.6 million openings, higher than expected and the highest level since May. The report includes September data because of the government shutdown. Shares of Home Depot are down 1%, its first investor day in more than 2 years, carried a downbeat message. Home Depot reaffirmed its financial forecast for its fiscal year, but management set a low bar for the following year. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
If a Lenovo computer for your business is on your holiday list, don't shop around. Just go directly to the source, Lenovo.com. It's your last chance to get exclusive deals on the PCs you want for your business, like the ThinkPad X9 14 Aura Edition and Yoga 7i 2-in-1. So avoid all that shopping chaos and price comparing, and just go directly to the source, Lenovo.com, where PCs are up to 35% off. That's Lenovo.com. Lenovo.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
When a documentary deals with fiction rather than fact, it really isn't a documentary, is it? I'll be right back.
Reagan, in his own voice, is brought to you by Mills Construction. For architectural, metal, roofing, and siding, call Aaron at 610-1256.
The very word documentary makes you think of research and of factual material painstakingly collected. And those who read or see a documentary are entitled to believe they've been given an objective, thoroughly documented treatise on whatever the subject might be. Not too long ago on this program, I discussed Cuba and gave some requirements I thought should be met before Uncle Sam welcomed that unhappy island back into the family of American nations. Now, that was an editorial, an expression of opinion with which you could agree or disagree. Since then, one of our TV networks has presented, with a certain amount of fanfare, a, quote, documentary, unquote, and question mark. It was called Cuba, the People. Was it really a documentary, or was it an editorial? Basically, the message was that soon Cuba will no longer be an underdeveloped country thanks to the success of socialism. The question is, how and when did Cuba become an underdeveloped country? Prior to Castro, Cuba led all its Latin neighbors in standard of living, literacy, and any number of other desirable indicators. For example, Cuba had more doctors in proportion to population, more automobiles, higher per capita income, more TV broadcasting and ownership of TV sets, more newspaper circulation, and even greater attendance at movies. In moviegoing, they were second only to us, which means they were second in the world. The so-called documentary was of Cuba today. It showed farmers plowing with oxen. Now, I don't know how widespread that is, but mechanized farming had reached a pretty high level back in Cuba, B.C., before Castro. Let me read some lines from what has to be considered a real documentary. A report issued in May 1962 by the Economic Research Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The report was entitled, Agriculture and Food Situation in Cuba. Quote, in 1958, Cuba was self-supporting in many foodstuffs such as meat, poultry, fish, eggs, milk, butter, tubers, vegetables, coffee, and fruits, of which there was a great variety and abundance. In the season, oranges were sold in pushcarts in Havana, peeled, iced, and ready to eat at 3, 4, or 5 for a nickel. Under communism, food ration cards were introduced before the third year of the revolution expired. Oranges have become so scarce that they can only be purchased in pharmacies with a doctor's prescription. Unquote. I don't know whether the makers of the documentary intended to sell us socialism or whether they were just set up by their Cuban hosts, but a truly objective documentary would have made it plain that the Cuba of today is not anywhere near as well off or economically sound as it was before Castro imposed communism on the people. Indeed, there's every reason to believe Cuba would be in real trouble without the sizable subsidy it gets from the Soviet Union. These days, when we're flooded with so many words on every subject, we need to check out some of those words before we accept them as gospel, including the use of the word documentary. And that goes for my words, too. Make sure you've heard all the facts before you make up your mind. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan, in his own voice, brought to you by Mills Construction, specializing in pre-engineered metal buildings. Call Aaron at 610-1256.
Protecting what matters on the right choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
It's Tuesday. It's 12:30. The bear is in the building. It's time for Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. Our guest today, 12:30, right here in studio, is Steve Odom, who is the CEO and lead instructor at Spartan Tactical Solutions. He's also part of a nonprofit called the Public Safety Development Group, which we'll be talking about here shortly. We're going to chat about the causes and effects of operational stress and PTSD on law enforcement and first responders, with resiliency training and why it's important. And then we want to unpack the Warrior Development Program that's going to be taking place on December 18th and 19th. I'm guessing here in the Central Coast, right, Steve?
Yes, at the San Luis Obispo Sheriff's Office.
Great. Well, welcome to Protecting What Matters, your first visit.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, thanks for being here. And at 1 o'clock, we're going to do a year-end wrap-up with Greg Haskin, who is the executive director of CoLab. We'll chat about Greg's first 9 months on the job and the big challenges ahead for Slo County in 2026. Economic development is now a priority. What took him so long, and will visions collide? And then affordable housing, really, budgets and higher taxes and election year politics. All that in the 1 o'clock hour. You can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Steve, you've had quite a meritorious career in law enforcement. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you're a former Marine.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I'm a family man. Mm-hmm. I've been married for about 31 years.
Wow.
Same wonderful wife. I've got two girls who are incredible, and really proud of that in law enforcement career. It's hard to keep the whole family together and intact. So that's one big part of my life. And I started in the Marine Corps at about 17 years old. I had grown up overseas pretty much in Asia.
Well, really? Whereabouts?
Taiwan, Japan, okay. Korea, yeah. And then throughout the United States. So okay. I traveled around quite a bit most of my life. And then at 17, I went to the United States Marine Corps. I served 4 years as an infantryman. And that was enough for me. I enjoyed the experience, but it was not something I wanted to do as a career. I wanted to go into law enforcement. Mm-hmm. So I went into law enforcement. Shortly after that, I started at the Sheriff's Office here in San Luis Obispo in 1993. I worked about a year in corrections, and then I worked patrol the rest of my career as a deputy, senior deputy, and patrol sergeant. I had a lot of collateral duties during that time, so I ran the range for about 10 years as a senior range master. I did SWAT for about 17 years wow. of that career. And when I left, I was the entry team sergeant.
It's interesting to me. I mean, it's such a, and I consider, having come from Los Angeles, I, you know, consider San Luis Obispo County a pretty sleepy county. And it's amazing that you have, there's a SWAT team. How do you get the training in for that? You know, I mean, because you don't have a lot of, you know, incidents, I wouldn't think.
Well, we average about one call out a month, either high-risk warrant service or a barricaded subject, and then we train 2 days per month.
Wow. Okay. And I think you said your dad was a police officer too, right?
Yes, my dad was.
A sheriff? Or
Yeah, he started off as a police officer in Texas, and then he was an undersheriff for a mid-sized county in Michigan. And then he worked at the district attorney's office here, and when he ended his career, he was the chief of the district attorney's office investigators.
How long have you been retired?
I've been retired for 3 years now.
Okay. How did that go?
It went really well. I got into the wellness space about the last 5 years of my career. Prior to that, I didn't really get involved in wellness. It was more about shooting and tactics and arrest and control, that type of thing, training. Mm-hmm. But I kind of saw a need for it. There was no one really doing that wellness stuff. So I got into it the last 5 years of my career. And part of that was counseling for people transitioning and getting close to retirement. So I did that kind of to set the example for the other retirees. And it was very beneficial.
And now you're probably busier than you ever thought you were going to be, right?
I'm pretty busy.
I'll bet. All right. Well, so let's talk about this. You've developed this Warrior Development Program. You're part, and you're, again, you're part of a larger group that we'll unpack here. And it's all about promoting resilience and wellness amongst police officers and first responders. You know, so why is this so important today?
It's very important because of the issues that today's law enforcement see and are dealing with. And like I said, the first 20 years of my career, I really paid no attention to this. And culturally, it wasn't part of the law enforcement culture to have wellness or take care of yourself in any way. It was much more about just sucking it up, driving on, that type of mentality. And you were either cut out for the job or you weren't. But as I got toward the end of my career, I saw people prevailing in deadly force incidences, which I was proud of the training that we had done to get them to that level. But then we would end up still losing them to PTSD. I lost friends to suicide. All kinds of problems that law enforcement encounters that really we didn't have a structure to deal with. We didn't have any type of wellness training. And I thought it was very unfortunate that we would lose officers, good people who had experience and were tested in that crucible of fire, came through the other end, but then ended up still being medically retired because of the moral and mental injuries that they suffered, and they just weren't prepared for it.
So how prevalent is PTSD and stress-related issues? How prevalent is that amongst police officers and other first responders?
Well, it's a very difficult question because it's underreported because of the stigma of mental health crisis. If you're in law enforcement, part of what we do, Barry, is seize guns from people who are reported to be mentally unstable or have mental health issues under like those red flag laws and things like that. So when you see people having their Second Amendment rights taken with no due process due to mental health issues, it doesn't really make you want to raise your hand and say, hey guys, I'm really suffering here, there's a problem. And also the culture is not very conducive to raising your hand and saying, hey, I'm suffering here, I'm having problems. So I would say the studies I've seen range between 20 and 35%.
Wow.
Or 10 and 35% is the studies I've seen. But I think it's massively underreported because of these issues. We're trying to change that culture to make it acceptable. And then also have culturally competent clinicians that people can go to privately without involving the county or their employers and just be able to quietly and privately seek help.
Are there really qualified clinicians in this area, in this county?
It's very difficult. If you go through the normal employee assistance program, you're just picking random people out of a lineup, and then they may or may not be accepting patients. And then I've had friends, and myself, my experience was pretty terrible. You know, when I finally did decide to go like get issues from some stuff that were happening in my personal life, which I wasn't very excited about, then the clinician ended up robbing a bank at gunpoint in Santa Maria, and then and then committing suicide shortly.
Really?
So it was a very eye-opening experience
funny,
to me.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it was
ironic, but not funny.
Ironic, yeah. So we have, you know, a lot of people in law enforcement have trust issues. We don't want to deal, you know, expose our vulnerability to outside sources. And then when you do, if they're not culturally competent, that can create more issues.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been working on trying to get culturally competent clinicians and people that are vetted and confidential to help out law enforcement. That's part of the wellness program.
So here's a little bit of a detour because that we didn't talk about, but I mean, so is this kind of treatment covered by an officer's health insurance plan through the department or whoever handles your health insurance or your workers' comp? I mean, is it covered or does it have to be paid for separately and privately?
Well, if you go through EAP, mm-hmm. that's covered through your insurance, you get 3 visits.
Mm-hmm. And that's it?
And that's going to be a random clinician that may or may not be culturally competent. So we were using a program called At Ease, which was free.
Mm-hmm.
And they covered Ventura County, San Luis Obispo County, and I believe part of Los Angeles. And they provided free vetted clinicians.
Hmm.
But they ran out of funding for this area, so we don't have that. But we've established another nonprofit that does a similar thing.
Okay.
So at least locally, I believe at the sheriff's office, now they can get confidential help with someone that's been vetted.
Okay. So let me ask you this. I want to talk just real quickly, and we'll circle back to this. You're part of another umbrella corp organization called the Public Safety Development Group. What's that all about?
That was started by my friend Michael Smiley, who's a retired Arroyo Grande police officer. Mm-hmm. He was a sergeant with Arroyo Grande. He was shot in the line of duty, medically retired. And he's very passionate about training and giving back. You know, one of the things I kind of live by is learn, earn, and return.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike is the same way. So he wants to give back to the law enforcement community. So part of the main goal is to provide free training for first responders.
Okay. All right. And we'll talk about that program on the other side of the break that you got coming up. Let's talk about the different kinds of, you know, common adverse situations that police officers and other first responders face. The first one on the list is operational stress, which is, I guess, exposure to critical incidents. So tell us a little bit, and then things like child abuse so tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I think that's the type of stress that police officers sign up for and are aware of those type of incidences, that you're going to deal with extreme violence, people with at their worst, you know, sexual assault, rape, robbery, home invasions, murder, all the bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're new and you're not very experienced to the world of violence and seeing human suffering, that is very different for most people.
Yeah.
And they definitely have some issues with that. And that's good. That's normal. We're all human beings. So when you see a dead child or something like that, you should have, I believe it's healthy to have some emotional reaction.
Yeah, some empathy.
Yeah, you can't have it on the scene. You have to hold yourself together. But I believe it's normal, especially if you have kids that age or a family member that is in a similar situation. A lot of times you have empathy with these situations, or you can see that happening in your own life or to your own children. So that can cause some issues with officers.
And all of these stresses, it's a cumulative kind of thing. So it's kind of like the Chinese water torture. Stuff keeps dripping on. Yeah, you know, you don't think it's a big deal at the moment, but then it kind of backs up, right?
Yeah, well, there's 2 types of, like, post-traumatic injuries, and one is, like, you have a huge traumatic event that impacts you in a negative way. But then other types of PTS is from accumulation of seeing trauma and human suffering day in and day out, years and years and years.
And then another type of stress is the politics that goes on in the various different departments and how they approach the whole PTSD thing and the whole political aspect of it. Explain some of that. I think that's really important.
Yeah, I think people, you know, officers are prepared for and sign up for the operational stress. Hey, people are going to try and kill me. I'm going to see death. I'm going to see suffering. There's going to be bad things that are going to occur at this job, and that's what you signed up for. But what people don't anticipate is the organizational stress, that there's going to be a lot of politics involved in the job, that basically the department or the DA's office may not support your actions, which you have milliseconds to decide on and implement the right course, but then they have years and years and years to evaluate your performance. And you're expected to perform, you know, at the Delta Force Navy SEAL level when it comes to violence. And we have, you know, nowhere near that level of training.
Well, in hindsight, it's 2020, right? So, so it's easy to cherry pick a situation and be critical about it.
Correct. And it's also, it's a weird situation in law enforcement, because the more proactive you are, the more incidents of force you will get involved in, the more citizen complaints you will generate, the more use of force, the more pursuits, the more problems that arise from your career. So the more proactive you are and the more you're aggressively confronting criminal behavior, which is your job, in my opinion, the less your career will flourish.
So talk a little bit about, you know, I mean, I see all these pictures on TV of the police officers in New York City or Portland or even L.A. during the several days of rioting down in L.A. I mean, what kind of stress impact does, you know, having to line up with your shields against, you know, citizens who are spitting on you and screaming at you? I mean, how do you train for that? And how do you, before and after the event?
That's a good question. I actually helped stand up the mobile field force unit for the sheriff's office here during COVID, because I foresaw there might be civil unrest, which there was. And we had, I believe, at least 90 protests in San Luis Obispo alone. And I went down to the L.A. riots for the George Floyd incidences and then returned to San Luis Obispo for more riots instead of we were supposed to get off after that. More happened.
Didn't work out that way.
But I think what causes problems for police officers is they feel that they're on the right side of society and doing doing the proper and just thing that society really needs to hold together. But then they're villainized and seen as the oppressor, the fascist, and that's a moral injury to the person that spent, you know, 25, 30 years of their career trying to uphold society's values, and then the tables are turned, and now you're seen as the opposite.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be hard. It's really got to be hard.
It definitely causes moral injury, and that's another one of the things that you don't sign up for. You feel like you will be, you know, I feel like law enforcement is a very honorable career, and I always saw, like, my father's career, I idolized what he did. I saw that as a very noble profession, and then to see it turned where it's not a noble profession because of the public narrative, or the mainstream media narrative, is very it's a moral injury that's definitely hard to deal with.
I'll bet. Real quickly, because we got like a minute left, I think. All of this, a lot of this, well, no, I hear the bumper music now. So we'll come back on these questions, and we want to make sure we take enough time with this. So, folks, we'll be back in about 2 minutes with Steve Odom. And so stand by.
Before we realize it, we will begin celebrating another new year. At Davis Body Shop, we have taken part in over 50 New Year celebrations, and it started back in 1962. Over these years, our New Year's resolutions have remained the same, giving you impeccable quality workmanship, always giving you a written guarantee, giving you the very best value, and making sure that your experience is as pleasant as possible. And that includes assisting you in getting your insurance paperwork filed properly. Remember, at Davis Body Shop, you get a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Davis Body Shop has two locations, one on El Camino Real, downtown Atascadero, and the other on Theater Drive at Paso Chevrolet. From the Davis Body Shop family to yours, best wishes for a happy holiday season.
As the markets have their ups and downs, real estate remains one of the most stable assets in everyone's portfolio. Hi, this is Cindy Mims, owner broker of Colony Mortgage, voted best mortgage company in North County 3 years running. We offer conventional FHA, VA, and reverse mortgages and 100% purchase loans for first-time home buyers. Are you a builder and tired of the red tape when dealing with banks and expensive hard money loans? I have a great new option. Or are you 62 years or older? You can possibly eliminate your monthly mortgage payment and get cash in your pocket. At Colony Mortgage, we have hometown service with competitive rates. We have years of experience with creative financing to find that right loan for you. If it's credit issues stopping you, let us help. We moved from our 20-year Atascadero location and now offer two convenient locations to meet personally in Atascadero and Paso Robles. Call 805-466-3598. Thank you for supporting your local businesses.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Steve Odom, CEO and lead instructor at Spartan Tactical Solutions, and also a member of the Public Safety Development Group. Call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Two things I want to ask you about, and then I want to get into this program you're doing on the 18th and 19th, Steve. Family stress, suicide, and divorce, all this kind of manifests itself on a lot of stress at the family level and personal level. So you want to touch on that real quickly?
Yeah, like I was saying, a lot of guys do not seek help. So they end up internalizing a lot of these injuries, basically PTSD, and taking it out on the people that they love the most,
yeah,
are the closest to them.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't get treatment, then they tend to have issues. And shift work is very difficult.
Yeah.
The stresses you deal with when you're at work, you tend to be in a high alert, very adrenalized
yeah.
state. And then
yeah.
when you get home, it's kind of humdrum. And it's easy to become very apathetic
mm-hmm.
and disengaged. Wanting to be kind of left alone, that type of thing. There's a lot of symptoms. And then suicide, we lose more officers to suicide than actual officer-involved shootings.
Really? So here's a quick question, and again, and then I want to go to the resiliency program. You know, one of the things you mentioned when we talked the other day is that many police and first responders go into their careers because they're working through some sort of childhood trauma. Explain that a bit.
Well, I think a lot of people that get into the top tier military organizations or SWAT, things like that, do suffer from childhood trauma. And I think part of it is like a never again mentality. Like if you turn yourself into a person who's very skilled at violence,
mm-hmm.
then it will be harder to be victimized is one part of it. And then I think a big component also is that you would want to be there for other people to prevent them from being victimized
mm-hmm.
In the first responder world or the military. And then also, not everybody, but it tends to create people who are good in those type of professions because they're very resilient. They can withstand physical pain a lot better, higher pain tolerance, being able to compartmentalize. Stoicism,
mm-hmm.
a lot of traits that do well in austere environments. And
all right, Yeah, it's very, very interesting. It's very interesting. All right. You are part of this public safety development group, which is a nonprofit, and you're going to be holding a warrior development program on December 18th and 19th at the Sheriff's. Down on, what is that, off of Oklahoma? In that
area?
Kansas
Avenue.
Kansas Avenue, that's what I meant. Those two states are close, I figured. But tell us a little bit about that and who's eligible to come to this and what will they get out of the program. We got about 3 or 4 minutes here.
All right, so this is kind of the brainchild of Matt Dunyemsik, who's one of the instructors that teaches the wellness aspect of it. But basically, it's made into 4 components. 2 are hard skills, jujitsu and shooting. That kind of foster resilience. And then another aspect is meditation, which is science-based meditation, and then it's followed by cold plunge.
All right, so tell me about how does that help somebody? I mean, just the idea. It's been so cold up at my ranch the last few weeks. Being cold is not my idea of a good time, obviously. So sure. What does that do for you?
Right. Well, through meditation practices and breath work, we train the officers to control their fight or flight response.
Okay.
And learn to calm down in extreme stressful environment. So when you get into the cold plunge, it induces the fight or flight stimulus response. And then through breathing techniques, you learn how to calm yourself.
Wow.
Which is very invaluable for critical incidents.
That's interesting. And then again, you do the shooting training, correct? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. The shooting training is primarily a close quarters type of pistol work that most police officers don't get. Shooting in entanglements and things that are a little bit less normal on the shooting curriculum. That's more involved integrated force or grappling and shooting, which normally our training is very siloed. So there's arrest and control or fighting is one silo and then shooting is another silo. But often in the street, there's a overlap and combination of those two things. So this training helps integrate that. And most police officers get very little training. 4 hours every 2 years is mandated by post in firearms, and 4 hours every 2 years of arrest and control. So that's a very minimal amount of training.
Yeah, really. And then what does the jujitsu do for the participant?
Jujitsu is a very key component for establishing resiliency. It's basically, in jujitsu, you are constantly kind of tested and getting destroyed by other opponents that know jujitsu or bigger or heavier, and then constantly coming back and getting better and better, and you build your confidence through that.
That's interesting. And it's a kind of a probably, I mean, because I actually did some of that when I was a kid, which is a long time ago, and it wasn't Brazilian. I guess it was probably Japanese jujitsu. But I mean, it's all a lot of situational awareness stuff too, and using balance and your opponent's own force to take them out, right?
Yeah, and learning how to be calm under during duress and very physically demanding situations.
All right, and then it looks like you also get into the psychology of de-escalation. What tell us a little bit about that?
That block is taught by Dr. Chuck Rylant, who's a former cop in Santa Maria and a PhD and use of force expert. And basically, he teaches a block. Mainly, there's a lot of de-escalation training for law enforcement that focuses on de-escalating others, which is not usually possible. And what Chuck focuses on is learning to de-escalate yourself.
Okay, great. I want to get this in. Who could qualify to go to this, and how do they get a hold of you?
If you're a law enforcement officer and anywhere in the state of California and you want to attend the class, you can email me at spartan03110@gmail.com.
All right. We'll have you back. I think this is a really fascinating topic. So thanks so much for coming in, Steve.
Thanks for having me, Ben. I appreciate it.
All right, folks, on the other side of the break, we'll be visiting with Greg Haskin. Stay tuned.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 1 o'clock.